Gavrilik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Hello and welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. I'm Mick Warner. Joining me, as ever, is Mark Robinson. And Robbo, before we get into the podcast, you've been missing on AFL 360. You've broken your ribs. Tell us, how the hell did you do that?
How did I do that? I slipped on grass over my dog. He was playing at my feet. Landed on a concrete ledge near my pond. And, yeah, it's waylaid me for a week. I'm hoping to turn up to 360 tonight. I've decided I'm not going to take any more pain-killing drugs. I've never had codeine before, Mick. Have you ever had codeine before?
I haven't, but I've seen the impact it can have on people, and it's probably for the best that Jason Dunstall has been filling in for you, because you on codeine on 360 would be very entertaining.
Well, maybe. Just, if anyone has had dreams, I was talking to Jack Revolt last Tuesday, which is my last night on 360, and Jack and I were talking during the ad break, and he said at one stage there he had rib problem for 6 weeks, and he had to take pain-killing injections all around the spot where it was fractured to get out and play the game. Because I said to him, how could you possibly – you couldn't possibly play. And it just made me think of all those unbelievably brave stories, like Nigel Appin playing in the final. And Dermot hurt his ribs, and Dipper hurt his ribs in 89. The power of pain-killing injections, mate, for these players to get up and play, it's just phenomenal, phenomenal courage.
And speaking of slipping on grass, you would have seen Bryson DeChambeau slipped on the grass on the tee on the 13th and then imploded and opened the door for your man John Rahm to win the – I was going for Louis Oosthuizen, but good result for your bank account, I believe.
It was a good result for my bank account. I just had a lazy $100 on him at 11-1, so that sort of made Monday morning a little bit. But, when Bryson slipped on the tee box, I think every single golfer has ever played says, yeah, I know what that's like. I know that's like your foot just slides away, and I can't believe that they don't swear off more often, these golfers.
He's got a bit of a glass jaw, I think, DeChambeau. But anyway, let's move on to the football. That's the footy podcast. Carlton, you wrote a scathing piece this morning about the time for talking is over, and you didn't like the fact that Carlton put the three players up to sort of defend Teague. Where is Carlton at?
It's a massive question, isn't it? I'm going to say I didn't like it. The Carlton Football Club can do whatever they like, and I'd rather put them up. At least they're putting up players to talk. But my argument was the time for talk's over, Mick. The time for talk. What does it mean? Oh, we support Teague. We love Teague. It's not his fault. We're playing for Teague. We'll play for him. Don't talk about it on Monday. How about you act like that on Saturday and the previous Saturday? And what is leading up to this week's game against Adelaide in the graveyard shift at 4:40 at Marvel Stadium? And I'll talk to you about crowds later on in the podcast. This is an enormous game of football, mate, enormous game of football. If the Blues go down at home, the review into the football department, I honestly believe now it's also a review into the coach. If they go down on Sunday night, I think the Blues, they're going to have a deep, deep look at David Teague, how he's coaching, what's he coaching, is there a disconnect between him and the players, can actually Teague get the best offensively out of this group? I can't believe what else the three reviewers, they'll be asking a lot of questions, but I think they'll be asking about David Teague to the players and the people around the club.
But I've said to you, dozens of times before that Carlton was always blamed, you know, Brendan Bolton, Nick Malthouse, Brett Ratten, now David Teague. The problem at Carlton is clearly above the football department, whether it's the board, whether it's the CEO, Kane Little, who the more people I talk to, seems quite a polarising figure, fell out with Soss, certainly put pressure on Mark Lejudice, who you know well, to fall out with Soss, chose Little over Soss almost, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
And then you got Luke Sayers, who's really already the president. Luke
Sayers has been there for – how long has he been there for, Mick?
Yeah, a long time, but he's now the leader in waiting.
Yeah, but there's only, what, seven people on the board. He's overseen or been part of decisions to hire and fire coaches. Like, what confidence?
No, that's true.
Carlton fans have in Luke Sayers. And they say, hang on, Luke, you've been part of the board that's appointed Sack Ratten, appointed Mick, Sack Mick, appointed Bolton, Sack Bolton, appointed T. I mean, your history in this area isn't too flash.
Yeah.
Now he wants to take over as president and say, righto, clean slate, let's have a review, let's all move on. See, when you talk about you know, the issues at board level, what exactly do you mean by that?
Factions and families. Carlton has always been, I reckon Carlton's been factionalised for 20 years since the Carlton salary cap, since a Carlton, very powerful group of Carlton people, blew up John Elliott and his group. You know, those big Carlton names like, you know, Peter Kerr and Wes Lofts and John Elliott, yeah, and Ken Hands, all those guys, and they got blown up by
Harry
another
Armstrong
group.
I think was still involved then.
Yeah, you were Carlton won, remember? Led by Ian Collins, and Silvani was involved with that. This is where it all began, and it's where it all still, in my opinion, stems from, that they have never been able to overcome that factionalism. And like,
so what's
that's
your
why
solution?
Well, leadership, but I don't know. I don't know. Like, we've seen these clubs get in these 20, 30-year death spirals, and they're hard to come out of. And Lejudice, unfortunately, has failed to unite the club, and now the people that I'm talking to are saying that they're putting their trust in Luke Sayers to get the job done. But then you've got the other, what you're talking about, which is the football side of things. So the players, for example, you know, McGovern, Saad, Jack Martin, Zach Williams, highly paid recruits. Have they got that wrong, Robbo?
Well, on the available evidence, Mick, you'd have to say, we'll have to say yes. Carlton, no one has a go at a football club for going out and trying to improve their list. I mean, if you don't try and improve your list, the clubs face criticism for sitting on their knees. So they went to the draft, Carlton. They got a lot of first-round draft picks and a lot of number ones, but a lot of first-round draft picks. And they said, right, we've got to complement that group with some, you know, mid-20s kind of players. And the problem is they have overpaid on every single one of those players. Martin, McGovern, Zach Williams, Adam Saad. Saad's having a reasonable year, okay? But Saad's issues at Carlton were the same issues he had at Essendon. He's a bit of a bomber. He's a bit of a bomber with when he kicks the ball. He's a really good runner. I'm not desperately upset with what Saad's given to the club, but what stands out for Saad, unfortunately, is that Nick Hines gone to Essendon to replace him, and Nick Hines having a absolute career year. But back to Carlton, they went out and they went after those four players, and those four players aren't delivering, and they're all on 700 plus.
One more. Zach Williams, you wrote, I remember back in November when the trade period was on, that you thought he was overpaid and not fit as a halfback flanker who wanted to play in the midfield. How's he travelling?
Oh, he's travelling terribly, terribly. I remember at the time, and the figure was $900,000.
Is that what he's on?
$900,000. And and he's there for, I think, 5 or 6 years, mate. That's a big commitment.
Yeah.
And they always wanted to turn him into a midfielder after that preliminary final game in the wet when he was very, very good. He's not fit enough. He's just not fit enough. And Carlton people I'm talking to, some old-style Carlton people, I reckon the team's not fit enough. Mm. Okay, so it's not just list management issues. There's fitness issues. There's issues with the players connecting to the coach or them carrying out the messaging. But Zach Williams has the capacity to go down as one of the worst trades that Carlton have ever made.
Wow.
The money that they're forking out, Mick, and what we've got back thus far, which is not a lot, and hopefully he'll come back over summer, be fit and, you know, be ready to go. You know, Mitch McGovern trade. The Mitch McGovern trade, mate, to bring Mitch McGovern in on $700,000. It's been another failure. And Jack Martin, I know he's been injured. He's been back for 3 games, but he's just playing pedestrian football. And the money they're getting paid, they've got to deliver more. They've got to actually not – they've got to change games, mate. That's the money that they're on.
And then you got, you know, Harry McKay, I think he was offered 6, but he took 2. Walsh hasn't recommitted yet, and Cripps is obviously, I know he said he'd guarantee it during the week, but you'll believe it when you see it. Would Ross Lyon consider coaching Carlton given that factionalism stuff that I was talking about and his friends with Soss?
It's a great question. It's a really, really good question. You know, I personally think that Ross Lyon would be ideal for Collingwood. Ross has sort of ruled himself out of that a little bit, unless he's – I was thinking when Ross said that. He said it last Sunday on Triple M. You know, I'm really happy with my life right now. I've always said I won't be going back to coaching. But if Ross was really
– Isn't that what Paul Roos said, and he got an extra couple of zeros when he went to Melbourne?
Yeah, that's exactly what Paul – if you were Ross – You'd have to take yourself out of the spotlight, mate, out of the fire. He can't be running commentary on whether he's interested in coaching or not. So what's the next step? He works at Triple M. He works at Channel 9. They're incumbent to ask him, you know, have you had a meeting with Carlton? Have you had a meeting with Collingwood, I should say? What's he going to answer that? Is it a weekly update on Ross Lyon and coaching? I think Ross was really smart to say, no. So it's really died down, hasn't it? But Ross Lyon to Carlton, his assistant coach there as well, like when he's at Carlton. But I don't know Ross really well. But what I do know of him, I think he's a man of principle. His great mate, Stephen Silvani, was shafted out of the club, as you said before, about between Kane Little and Soss. I don't know how well Ross Lyon gets on with Brad Lloyd, the football manager, so the head of football. So I'm thinking if Ross Lyon was
Fremantle, they were at Fremantle, weren't they? Yeah. So
yeah, people have told me it ended badly, but I don't know that. Okay.
Ross Lyon's not going to Carlton. No way.
No way.
No.
I tell you what, if you're a senior coach, and you've got an itch that you want to scratch. The lure, the attraction of coaching at Carlton or Collingwood, two of the biggest clubs in not just AFL, two of the biggest clubs in sport in Australia, that to me would be a pretty strong attraction.
Yeah, but he's got those factors that we talked about. Have we finished with Carlton? Because I want to talk about another basket case.
And what would that? Who would that be?
The $250 million disaster club in southeast Queensland, the Gold Coast Suns, in their 11th season. About as bad as they've ever gone at the moment. What did you make of Tony Cochran's performance on the couch Monday night.
Why'd you call it a performance?
Oh, well, he's, you know, his interview. It was, it was good TV. I'll answer it.
Yeah, it was good TV. And, but that's what I expect from Tony Cochran. He he doesn't let anyone run over him. You stand up to anyone. There was some strong questioning. And what I gleaned most from that was a really strong acknowledgement from Tony that the club's in trouble.
Why is the club in trouble when Mark Evans has gone up there on his white horse to fix the white elephant? He must be on enormous money, Mark Evans. He's been there for 4 years. Challenge accepted is the sort of slogan that he's gone under. Is the Gold Coast Suns in a better position 4 years after Mark Evans than when he got there? Or has he discovered, like everyone else before him, that you need more than rhetoric? The football department that I look at of the Gold Coast Suns that he's built is as flimsy as anything I've ever seen in the AFL. You got John Haynes, who's the football boss, who, by the way, filmed his coach pissing on a pub wall and posted it on social media. You got Stuart Dew, who has got a 21% win-loss record and he's, whatever, is near 80 games. Craig Cameron, list boss. Can't think of a sort of list that he's built that's gone deep in September. I might be wrong.
Craig Cameron and the players he selected in the recent couple of years, I think every recruiting boss in AFL footy was saying, yes, he's taken the right players. You know, Lukosius, King, Rankin, Rao, Anderson, tick, 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 tick. So my concern is I've got all these super young talents, and other than Rao, who really jumped out at last year, and King's going to be a good player. Where's the development of these players? Yeah.
Where's it been for 11 years? And Jonathan Brown, he keeps bringing it up, that the problem the Suns have got is their measuring stick is against GWS, who right from the start had a culture. I told you the story 10 times. You go into the Giants rooms after a game at Marvel in the Saturday night, and there'd be aunties and uncles and cousins and brothers and sisters, and they had an absolute culture. And you went to the Suns rooms and there was no one there but the players, and they'd been smashed, and it was just a miserable football club. And the culture's been wrong. The AFL got it wrong right from the start. And they've never been able to break the death spiral.
Mark Evans
has gone up there. Mark Evans needs to be held to account as well. You know?
Mark Evans was sent to Brisbane about 2016 or 17 to do a complete review of the Brisbane Lions. Oh, it's not working. What's going on? Mark Evans, I think, was footy boss at the time, the AFL. So he went to the Brisbane Lions and, you know, run the All Points Bulletin over that club. And you'd think that the AFL have got to be concerned. They just have to be concerned about this football club. Does the AFL send people to the Gold Coast Suns to review what the Gold Coast Suns are doing now under Mark Evans, did to Brisbane?
They've already sent Mark Evans there to review the club.
So they just leave it in his hands, do they?
I've heard that 12 players, a group of as many as 12 players, are eyeing the exit door this season, despite Tony Cochran saying that there will be no go-home retention factor this time. Now, admittedly, some of those players are not in the team, but there's top 10 draft picks not in the team regularly. And there are some, you know, Ben King, you keep hearing St Kilda are supremely confident of getting Ben King. You can't afford another walkout at the end of this season.
Well, what happens if there is? What happens?
Well, I've always said that the onus is on head office to fix
this. Absolutely.
It's their baby. But, you know, they're...
But what, go back, just to discuss that, buddy. So we get to September, October, and it's revealed that a group of players want to leave Gold Coast. They've had enough. They've been up there, I want to leave. Okay? So what happens then to the Gold Coast? No worries, we just give you more draft picks and we go again? I mean, when does the AFL actually say, we got this wrong?
When have they ever said that about anything?
Maybe
in your 30 years in football.
Yeah, maybe a change of administration at the AFL might see that, because I was talking to a couple of club people yesterday, and they were saying if this was a business, they would cut the Suns. It's dragging the business down badly.
Yeah, but they've got their own DNA in it. That Gil and these guys have got their own DNA, fingerprints on the Suns. So you're right, they're not going to admit fault. But the scenes in Tasmania, I know it was Essendon, but to see the passion in the stands down there in Tassie, at the week that Tony Cochran had a crack at Tassie, just made, and Tim Lane, who I love, and he's fired up on Twitter, he's saying, we could have this every week because the Tassie Devils would play Essendon every year down there. They'd play Richmond down there, and it would go off.
Yeah, and, it would. It would. And so, what we've been conditioned to believe over the last 8 years,
It's North Melbourne versus Gold Coast.
It's North Melbourne versus Gold Coast.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been conditioned.
Yeah.
And, you know, not many people, if you don't barrack for footy, you're not going to turn up and watch that sort of game. So that's, and they've dropped away this year, so the crowds have dropped away. And then we see, we saw on the weekend the might of the Tasmanian spirit when it comes to football.
Yeah.
That's what we saw. If they had their own team, Mick, I reckon they'd get sellouts nearly every week.
I agree with you, but you know what else we saw? And it's quite disturbing, the reawakening of Essendon. You can just, for the first time in a long time, probably since 2012 when things were going well, I'm thinking, oh, we haven't had to worry about Essendon for a long time, but they look on the right trajectory.
Why are you saying that through gritted teeth? Everyone likes to see Essendon down. They've been down for a long, long time. It was a great game of football. The Hawks played pretty well, you know. I think everyone's got to stop jumping all over Essendon and saying, oh, yeah, they're the whiz-bang team. They beat a team that won three games of football. It was a good game.
It's just the kids. It's just the way you're doing it. Good to watch. I love Harry Jones and these kids.
Yeah, Harrison Jones. When you see the kids, play like they did and like they have been, of course you're going to get excited. You know, Nick Cox and Harrison Jones with 100 games under their belt. What are they going to do? It's funny, Simon Moy, who works with us, is a mad, mad Essendon supporter. He sends me and text messages every week when Essendon plays. He sent me a text. He goes, doesn't Harrison Jones floating into packs with a long sleeve jumper remind you of James Hurd floating into packs taking marks?
Oh, and boy. I thought,
yeah, it is, oh boy. But, you know, that's what footy does to a team and supporter base that's been so down for so long.
KB
when they
said
these kids doing stuff, you think, like, wow. I mean, is Harrison Jones, is he showing as much as the King brothers?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, KB said Harrison Jones reminded him of a young Matthew Richardson on his call on 3AW on Sunday.
So we've got Richo and Hurd comparisons after half, handful of games, 10 games.
Only in, you know, movements, not quite in output yet, obviously. But no, it's all good.
It's not just the kids. And this is where Ben Rutten and the management out at Essendon have got to. They've got to take a little bit of credit for this first half. You know, the half year resurgence of the footy club. You know, they've fixed their culture. They've actually, you know, and Zach Merritt spoke about it. And Ben Rutten's introduced it, and Zach Merritt spoke about it to us 2 months ago. Culture's huge, and just back onto the Suns for a second. I'll put something to you, and tell me what you think about that. So the Suns played on when Saturday.
Yeah,
I had friend of a friend in Burleigh Heads on Saturday night. And all the Suns players went down to Burleigh Heads for a big, I presume it's a sip. You know, they were out and about. They're only young fellas. They can do what they like. So they just put in a really poor performance. And then, you know, a big group of them spend the night in Burleigh Heads carrying on and whatever. If that was in Melbourne, you know, and some of the performances they were putting up, you wouldn't go out, would you? You'd stay inside. You wouldn't go out in the public because people would be just talking to you and abusing you about your performance. I wonder when we talk about culture, and it's a big accusation, do they hurt enough, these players?
Well, I don't think that there's the scrutiny on them. So, you know, I wonder when they went out, and I'd heard the same thing, that they had a pretty wild night celebrating a 50-point listless performance. But probably no one really knows who they are up there, and I think partying's always been a bit of an issue for the Gold Coast players. And maybe, well, one person I spoke to who about that night out that you're talking about sort of saw it as another example of why they think the wheels are falling off again.
Yeah, well, they've got some major concerns up there. Major concerns.
You know how you judge a good footy club, don't you?
How's that, Barras?
The pillars. Your CEO, your president, your captain, your football boss, your coach, and then your list. But they don't have the right pillars. They've never had the right pillars. And until someone at AFL House says, "Hey, has anyone got a pillar?" They're going nowhere.
What's your solution? Pillars. Clearly, pillars. So you replace Buckley, the pillars.
Nathan Buckley. Yeah, anyone.
Okay, so the AFL run this club, okay? The AFL runs this club. So the AFL surely have had discussions about how can we help the Gold Coast, how can we help fix them. They have got some coaches in Melbourne. A Ross Lyon, a Nathan Buckley who's available. Does the AFL go to them and say, we really need you. We really need you. We'll pay you X amount of dollars. We need you to go up. Like, would Nathan Buckley consider, and I don't know, only Bucks could answer this. I'll put it another way. Would the AFL consider approaching Nathan Buckley and saying, would you like to go up and head the Gold Coast Suns?
Yeah, and not just Bucks. You'd need a whole team of them. You'd need a strong football boss. You'd need the whole kit and caboodle. And I think the industry, as long as they're not working at other clubs, but maybe one or two would be, but they've never done it, Robbo, you know. And that's what I said when Mark Evans sort of went up there on huge money, he was portrayed as the saviour, but nothing's changed. So
no,
that didn't
nothing's changed. Would Brian Cook?
Yeah, exactly. There's another name. I'd prefer him on the AFL commission, to be honest. And that's what I want to talk to you about after the break, is who should be filling these two vacant spots on the AFL commission.
Welcome back. The commission is meeting with the presidents today. Usually they do it, well, they always do it on the day of the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame was supposed to be on Tuesday night, but as we all know, was postponed. But the commission meetings going ahead. Now, Mick, I read your piece this morning. There's two vacancies coming up on the commission. And your argument, and I have to agree with you, and your argument is, why do we have to go and get another merchant banker or a CEO of a mining company onto the commission? Why don't we approach and elevate guys like Kevin Sheedy or Mick Malthouse, Kevin Bartlett, Andrew Ireland, you mentioned this morning, a very, very respected football voice, Brian Cook, into those roles?
Absolutely. Dennis Pagan, football IQ is the thing that's been missing, and it's happened by osmosis at the AFL Commission over a period of time that it's there's Andrew Newbold sits on the commission, but, you know, I know that he was chairman of three premierships, nothing to sneeze at, but I don't know about his football IQ in terms of having worked, in club land like Cookie has, or as a coach like Malthouse or Bartlett or Sheedy. And that's, I think, to the detriment of the game for a long time that you haven't had football people on the commission. For example, last week when we had the dispute over the bump that went to the tribunal, not to say that that would go to the commission per se, but those types of issues, I wonder whether the AFL commission has anywhere near enough football IQ. I think it's by design, to be honest, out of state, out of mind. That's the way the AFL executive, where the real power resides, has wanted it for a long time. I would love, they haven't, those Kim Williams and Jason Ball left the commission 4 months ago, Robbo, and they haven't been replaced. So we've got a reduced commission and we've got five club presidents on a nominations committee. Wouldn't it be great to have a football person on, two of them, on the commission?
Yeah, I agree with that. Is Eddie Maguire still part of the, was he ever part of the nominations committee?
Yeah, he has been in the past. But for a long time now, the clubs really haven't had a hell of a say, certainly, you know, the majority of clubs, a hell of a say in who goes on to the commission. Monday night was supposed to be, it was meant to be a huge week for Richard Goyder, as I wrote in that piece. Monday night, was there was going to be a big, big bash at the Prince Hotel in Ackland Street. There's a lot of presidents have left the game this year. You've got Eddie, Peter Gordon, Colin Carter, Lindsay Tanner, Glenn Bartlett, there's one other big one that I've heard, Rod Chapman, Adelaide, and the two commissioners, Williams and Ball. So you've had a huge turnover.
Of footy IQ. Absolutely.
Yeah. Gordon's another guy who I would like on the commission. Someone who has been in and around clubs, understands the struggle. This is why the Gold Coast Suns have failed, Robbo, because the AFL are good at a lot of things, but running clubs is not one of them. There is no one at the AFL leadership who's ever worked inside a club apart from Travis Old, and that didn't go all that well for him. I don't think that they understand their core product enough.
Yeah, maybe they don't. Maybe they don't. They would argue they do, but maybe...
Would they?
Maybe they don't. You wrote today that Gil gave a hint that it might be coming to an end, but when I was reading your story, I didn't read what the hint was.
So yeah, he was saying sort of 8 to 10 years is he reckons is about the limit on Adam Gilchrist's radio channel in Perth. And, you know, this is his seventh already, so his next year, you know, I think he's closer to the end. Obviously, Gil is
there's no doubt about that.
1 or 2 years in him, so that didn't surprise you, did it?
He's been very coy when asked. I speak to him occasionally. I've asked him on the record, off the record, and he always asks the same. He always answers the same way. He's committed. You know, he's in there, he's committed, and he'll keep working hard. So it's always a big story if and when an AFL chief executive moves on, but I'm more interested in the fact if he does move on, Gil, who would be his replacement? Would it come from club land? I don't know the answer.
How could it not be Brendan Gale, who interviewed for the job 8 years ago? So did Brian Cook. Brian Cook went for the job twice. and got overlooked first by Demetriou and then by McLaughlin. Give me one reason why Brendan Gale, who turned a dysfunctional, broken, pathetic club around from a 37-year, whatever that was, to, you know, powerhouse, 100,000 members, sponsors, three premierships. What?
No, I can't give you one reason. I cannot give you one reason.
Well, I'll give you one. I'll give you one. It's because he's not in the family. He's not in the tent. Outsiders
are. If you're not in the tent, you don't sit at the dinner table.
Yep. So instead they're looking at Travis Old. You know, he's done a good job with fixturing and whatnot during COVID, but he did run the Gold Coast Suns. Can't forget that.
For how long was he up there? He was the inaugural CEO.
He was there for long enough for the problems to set in.
Oh, God, there's problems up there. There's no problems up there. The shame is, in Queensland footy, is that right now as we speak, the Brisbane Lions are the most successful sporting club in Queensland right now. The Broncos are stuffed. The Cowboys are stuffed.
What's going on with your... Would that be like Jared Waitley going to become the football manager of Geelong? What happened to your NRL offsider, NRL 360?
I don't know what you're talking about. What happened?
The host of NRL 360, what's his name? Former player.
Ben Icon.
Yeah, yeah. So he's left... effective immediately to go and run the Brisbane Broncos football department.
So I'm thinking
yesterday. Now I know you're on the codeine, but could Jared Waitley replace Stephen Wells?
No, probably no. He couldn't. So Ben, I didn't know that. So Ben Icon's gone.
Yeah, he is.
Well, the Broncos are stuck.
Last night was his last show. Well, they're not now. They're rebuilding. But they're not stuffed. They're just going.
No. But the point I'm making is that the Brisbane Lions, who've got a game against Geelong this Thursday night, it would be the hottest ticket in town.
Yeah.
They can only get 32,000 in because of COVID. No. So they'll get as full a house as they could possibly get. But the Brisbane Lions, as we speak, Mick, are the most successful club in all of Queensland. And to think that would ever happen in a rugby league stronghold, you know, like even the state of origin, Queensland, they got slaughtered. So the Lions.
How do you think they did it? How do you think the Lions did it? Pillars, leadership. Yeah,
they went and got Swan,
and then players.
Then got Noble. It was funny when Mark Evans went up to do the review at Queensland at Brisbane. Yeah, you know, I think the Lions were pretty keen on getting Neil Baum or Jeff Walsh up there to run their footy department. But the AFL were really keen on getting David Noble there. So the Lions said, yeah, okay, no worries. And Noble proved himself to be a really important selection. So they had Noble, and they also got Luke Hodge. So don't underestimate Luke Hodge's impact as well on the field.
Oh, yeah.
So they were able to nail some really those really, really important pillars to the point where, as I said, for Thursday night they play the Cats. What a game. Hey, what a game that'll be.
Ah, oh, magnificent. And Lions. But Cats are, you know, they're both top 14. No doubt about that. But
Lockie Neal's back in town.
Yeah, home ground advantage. But it's good to have the buys over with too.
I think the AFL have got to get rid of the buys. And I've never really thought that. I've never really been bothered in the past to have an opinion on it because I've been cranky and shitty this week with me fractured rib. I was thinking to myself, five games over the weekend, what's going on? Come on. Why don't we just have a week's break?
You want to hold? We all get a week off.
Well, we don't.
TV networks don't want a week off. It's a bit vexed. But yeah, three weekends in a row is a bit much, isn't it?
But the ladder, like, you can't really look at the ladder.
No, you can't, because
they're behind the game and COVID this year, they moved games. Anyway, I'd be in favour if the AFL come out and said, right, we're going to scrap the three by round concoction and we're just going to have a week off for everyone.
Well, I'm glad we've got the pre-finals bye this year for the first time, because my team's not going to finish in the top four and that's going to be an advantage for them.
Yeah, but you can't have that opinion, Mick, just because your team might be
advantage. That shows you how wrong it is, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And
disadvantages the top four.
Loves it.
Who does?
Luke Beveridge loves it. Yeah. They won the 2016 flag because of it.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think it's really unfair. I think it's really unfair on those who finish top two and they win and they play one game in 25, 26 days. I don't think that's right. But, the AFL, they look at what's fair sometimes and then they dismiss other aspects of footy where most people think was unfair.
I still don't quite understand why they brought it in, actually. It was that day Ross Lyon dropped 16 players or
rested. Integrity of games, they called it.
Yeah.
The integrity of games. But now,
what about the integrity of the finals?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you make one decision, there's always unintended consequences. And I think after 5-6 years, we've seen enough of the unintended consequences to see that the top two teams are disadvantaged. Because all year, they play with 7 6-day breaks, all year. And then they get to the finals, the most important month in the year, and suddenly you're playing one game in almost 4 weeks.
Yeah.
That's not right.
No, it's not. But the codeine's really sharpened you up this week. It's been a good podcast. I think that's all
I actually decided today not to take any. In my first day, I haven't had codeine, so I can go back on TV tonight and be a little bit sharper than I usually I have been the last couple of weeks. Right. Anyway, I'll let you go. Good to talk to you. I'll talk to you next week.
See ya.